Hi, my name is Roy Collin, and welcome to the show. I've also got Fight Podcast, The Awakening Podcast, Exposing Fraud and Corruption, but with Solutions, The Crypto Podcast, talking about all things blockchain, NFTs, crypto, The Meditation Podcast, talking about all different types of meditation, but there's also meditations there from 1 minute to 2 hours. And the other one's the Learn Polish Podcast, so if you're interested in learning Polish, you can do that. And the other one is Speaking with Roy Collin. And I just have guests from around the world talking about either public speaking or also about their book or just general life in general. And you find everything on bio.link/podcaster. I'm also a podcasting coach. And you see the QR code there. And it's also on my link as well. And if you're interested in actually going on some podcast shows, I'm helping people doing that. Or if you're interested in sponsorship, you can contact me. And I'd like to thank my sponsor, danielpacker.com. He helps people with anxiety, stress, and addictions. He's got a 90% success rate, and you only pay if you're successful. So be sure to check him out, danielpacker.com. I hope you enjoy this week's show. Welcome to the Speaking Podcast. You can find all our episodes on speakingpodcast.com. My guest today, speaker, author, fitness innovator, and you can see the beautiful background for those listening on Spotify or on BitChute, Rumble, a race announcer, which I don't think I've ever had a race announcer on yet, and a cancer crusher. Please welcome Fitz Caller. Did I do your surname justice today?
You sure did. Yeah, it's perfect. And everything sounds great with your little Irish accent. So just talk to me.
So you might let the listeners know a little bit more about Fitz.
Yeah, so I'm noisy, I'm bossy, and I make a living going blah, blah, blah to help people live better and live longer. The root of who I am is a fitness expert, and you know, making fitness understandable, attainable, and fun is the most important thing that I do. However, I've been through a lot, as we all have, and so my messages have they've evolved, you know, going through 15 months of cancer care, chemo, radiation, surgery, that really taught me some lessons that are worth sharing. But I live in Florida and I love animals and I love water sports and I just love being outside and I love people. And that's one of the coolest things about what I do. You know, you put me on a stage, sometimes it's with a small group of 15 executives, but more often than not, I get hundreds or thousands of people in my audiences, and I am fueled by them as much as they are me. And I love the connection. I just love people.
And is it something that from a young age you like to be out in this, or is it something that evolved? How did you actually get confident in being in front of people?
Yeah, so I've always been an extrovert and naturally happy. I started teaching fitness at 14, fell in love with that, fell in love with the importance of it. And not only was I teaching classes as a kid, but I started speaking to others. And it's funny, I actually did have that time in my life where when I would speak, I'd be assigned speaking in school and I'd get up in front of the auditorium full of hundreds of my peers and my knees would knock and my breath would, you know, I don't know, it was difficult, right? And then I saw a peer of mine who was so nervous speaking in front of our classroom that he was melting down. He just full-blown melted down, sweating and panicking. And I thought, well, that's unreasonable. That's irrational because he's just talking to us. And at that point, I thought, I should also not be nervous. So that combined with Toastmasters, when I was 6 years old, I was in a Toastmasters club. That really gave me the skill set to create a message that was cohesive and clear, concise, without stammering. Nobody likes to hear a speaker on a stage saying and ah and whatever filler words and sounds they have. And so I started really putting it together in high school. I knew I wanted to speak for a living, and I built up my career slowly and gradually, as it should have been. I used to speak for free. I used to speak to small groups, and finally corporations started noticing. Disney, Oakley, Tropicana, massive corporations started saying, you know what, our employees or our customers could benefit from your messages. Can we hire you? And of course, my answer was yes, I'd love that very much. And so it's really spiraled out of control in the most wonderful way, because I love the invitations to come and change people's lives.
Brilliant. And you mentioned Toastmasters at six, and I just go because I know that they have like programs for younger people. Was it one of these special programs that they did for youth, or was it that you were tagging along with one of your parents to?
It was actually in school, elementary school, and here we have a gifted program. I don't know if that's a worldwide phenomenon, but they take the kids with the high IQs, the quick learners.
I wouldn't have been in that group.
But yeah, I got tested when I was five. You know, they took a handful of us out that they thought, you know, this kid's a little quicker than the others. And we got tested. And if we passed, we would be pulled 2 days a week out of our regular classes to go do accelerated learning, an extra thing. So, and when I was 6 years old, I was learning how to do computer programming, learning how to speak Spanish. We produced TV shows, we created plays. And we did Toastmasters, and my teacher I'm connected with on Facebook. So I still, you know, every time I step on one of these ginormous stages, I think of her. And, you know, I reach out probably at least once a year and say, hey, Miss Lombard, thank you so much for that Toastmasters experience, because I make a fantastic living off of it now. And really, the things I do now as a grown up, a professional speaker, all stemmed from Toastmasters in first grade.
Brilliant. It's a pity that they don't get all the children to do that, because I think it's a fantastic. And what I've noticed is a lot of Americans are way more confident than Europeans. Europeans tend to be very shy, and they, you know, they don't really like, whereas a lot of them, but I think if they could bring that into every school around the world, it just gets rid of one fear, because even in business, those that can speak better get the, you know, promotions, even though they mightn't deserve it.
So I just left the University of Florida last week. I was speaking to their graduating seniors, and I teach a workshop called Create a Career 101, where I teach them how to create a career doing what they love, where they want, for whom they want, with the people they want, for the amount they want, right? That's how you make the dream career. And I go through these steps, and one of them is learn how to communicate effectively. And you cannot sound like one of these bozos on reality TV using the word like every other word. I like went to college and like, I learned how to do the like, they just sound so dumb. I used to sound so dumb. I had to beat that out of myself. And there are tactics for removing those really ignorant speech patterns. And I do impress upon these students that if you're going for the job and you've got better credentials and more experience and someone with less of those things shows up and they can speak eloquently, that's the person that's going to get a job. No matter what your resume says, you cannot speak like a bozo and have people want to hire you, give you money, have you represent their businesses. So yeah, I think speaking coherently and concisely is a very important skill that not enough people have.
And with like your business, because I can see it in the background there and it looks fantastic, fits Ness. So obviously a play on words, but it's something that's memorable. And like, you've done that from a young age, that you kind of had that, because that's, you have that business for a long time. Yeah.
Yeah. I was about 19 when I hosted my first television show, and that was great. It was Cardio Jam. And I worked out with people via television 3 times a week. It was very popular and had a lot of success helping people. And then I went to branch off into a video for children, which event actually never got made, but we were trying to come up with a catchphrase or the name of the show. The name of the show was going to be Cardio Kids, but I was trying to think like, what could I do to tie myself into it? And finally just fits and fitness combined in my head. And I thought, ah, so I incorporated my business. I got the trademark on fitness when I was 20. And I'm so glad I did. And we've had some lawyers go after people for trying to use it. But yeah, it's fitness. It's nice to have a brand that actually makes sense, right?
Like the one thing that he just through my research, everything is consistent. So then, you know, a lot of times people have different things, the coaching, the speaking and all these different things, but you have that name and it's kind of, hence I think, why you probably stuck out and landed the big boys like Disney and Oakley and all these different things.
Yeah, you know, I hope the branding is important, but more importantly, I hope my reputation is the thing that seals the deal more often than not. I want to know that when I walk off a stage, not only are the audience members on their feet, but the person who hired me is pumping their fist saying, that was awesome. I just left a presentation in Chicago a couple of months ago, and they gave me a topic that was not my own. They gave me a different topic. So I thought, okay, I really had to work hard to create a presentation that I believed in that was relevant to their topic and come up with anecdotes and stories and things. But I worked very hard on this new topic that, again, was not one of my own. And halfway through the presentation, I could tell the audience has already been in. They were cheering and laughing and it was going great. But when I got off the stage and went around the room, the guy who hired me, which is the one you want to impress, he was pumping his fist. He said, oh my God, that was incredible. And I said, I'm so happy you liked it. He goes, I didn't like it. I loved it. I had chills. And I thought, oh, thank goodness. Thank goodness. And so then you ask, will you tell your friends? Will you tell your friends in similar hiring positions that I knocked it out of the park and I gave you chills? And he said, yes. So I hope he's doing that right now.
And how important is it that, like, when you're speaking, because sometimes people are there to obviously connect with the audience, but sometimes they're trying to impress the audience too much and might burn the bridges with the person that's hired them. Because I think at the end of the day, you need to look after who's feeding you, which is the client. So, like, I mean, you've obviously seen that where people do it wrong. And what's the best way to make sure that you never do that?
Yeah, I think it's very important to be on the same page with the people that are hiring you and have a clear meeting in advance. These are the things I'm going to talk about. I mean, I never go through my whole presentation, but, you know, are there any hot spots for your audience? It's funny. I always intertwine the value of health and fitness, right? Not everybody has to look like a Kardashian, but if you move your body, you'll be more likely to perform better and experience less pain and have more confidence and so forth. But one of the people who hired me, they said, we have a person who is disabled. So please don't talk about being in great shape being so important. And it really is a conflict because being in great shape is important. You know, we can't sugarcoat something like that because one person, I'm sure that person realizes that, yeah, of course, for the average individual, exercise and moving your body is necessary. And gee whiz, I wish I could. Thank goodness I'm successful anyways. But yeah, so I've walked the line before, but don't tick off your bosses. That's the people who've hired you. Please don't tick them off. And obviously if they've come after you, hopefully they want your specific message. And you should be fine. You should be fine. Always err on the side of caution with those things. And don't curse. Don't curse on a stage.
So you've been on the TV show. So, like, it can be also that you're being interviewed. What tips could you give for camera work?
Oh boy, this one's interesting. So as we are right now, right, we're talking into the camera, right? Looking dead in each other's eyes. And I like to look dead into the eyes of my audience members. That's who I am. And even my role on TV usually has me instructing that way. When you're on the news, they want you to look at the broadcaster, at the person interviewing you. So do that. Do follow their instructions. If usually it's a multi-camera setting, if you are looking at your host, they will find your face for particular messages. But I come prepared. If you're going to be interviewed, make sure they know who you are, what you're all about, and what if you're trying to express a message, make sure they know what message you're hoping to deliver to their audience. Ask them, would you please put my website on the lower third? Will you put my name up? Sometimes they'll interview a guest and not have their name or their contact information there, which makes your interview 50% useless, right? Because most of us are trying to recruit more business. So look at your host and tell them what your needs are, your goals. And, you know, sometimes I'll say, can I bring my books? Can I bring my books? And I say, yeah, hold them over here. So have a good conversation, communicate. That's what it's all about, communication.
So I know you've had a podcast for years, but have you done radio as well?
Yeah. Yeah, I've done radio. I mean, really, for decades, my days have been intertwining television, radio, podcasting, which is a new thing compared, right? Historically, podcasts are new, online content, and live audience work. I would say that my favorite thing to do is live audience work. So this is great. I love it. I do love being on TV. The power of television or podcast is sometimes if I wake up and I'm on national morning news, I know that I've gotten to interact with 8 million people, right? Hopefully I gave 8 million people news they could use to become better today. That's the great part about live television, but a live audience, you know, that's when you get to see each other's faces. I love it when the audience starts nodding their head or hear them laughing or when they ask questions, you know, they're engaged in the topic. So yeah, a mixture of everything. And the thing I love most, live audience, but TV, radio, podcast, it's all fantastic as well.
And because like some people are even, I see a lot of podcasters are doing kind of the radio style as well. But with your radio experience, any kind of tips for people to that you've learned over the years, how to do it right?
Well, I would say, are we talking about as a guest or as the broadcaster?
I suppose it can be both because you've got both people listen. So maybe take it from both angles.
Yeah, I would say if you're on radio or television, keep your messages short and sweet because you'll likely get 3 minutes. So I was a guest on a radio show last week, 10 minutes flew by. We had so much ground to cover in 10 minutes. So my answers that could have been really long-winded, I cut them short just so we could get to the next topic and keep going. So I think brevity is very important for a segment piece. And then I think it's important to speak with a smile so people stay engaged. You know, a monotone presentation is no fun for anyone. And if they can't even see your face and all they hear is you talking about business and why profit is better than losses, then you're going to lose them. So be enthusiastic about your topic and come prepared, know exactly what you're going to talk about, maybe do a little research in advance. If you're the host, you better do research. You better know who your guest is and ask in advance, how do we pronounce your name? I don't want to get on live radio or television and butcher that. So preparation, and then be brief if you have to, because then you'll get more out of the interview if you're the guest. And then, you know, come prepared with fantastic stories if you're going to be on a podcast format where you get a full 45 to 60 minutes to have a conversation.
When you're on either the radio, like you said, you know, you compressed a lot of stuff in 10 minutes or, you know, on a TV show, do you have to ask permission then, or is there some sort of form when you want to repurpose it and use it on your own website when you know you've got gold that you can say, I was on NBC or whatever it was? Do you have to get permission for that, or can you just extract it?
I just share. Yeah, if you want to complain after the fact, go ahead. Now, if I'm doing a corporate presentation, so the one I was just telling you about where everybody was pumping their fists and so forth, after I saw a videographer in that room and a professional photographer. So after the fact, I reached out and I said, hey, I saw that you had a videographer and a photographer. I would love some of that footage to use for my reel. And they said, we will not give you the video, but we will share some photos with you. And that'll come soon. It still hasn't come, but hopefully it'll come. But yeah, so there's things you have to ask permission to have. But if it's on the internet, it's public domain, share away. And then, share away. I feel good about that.
So your books, you've got a few books. You might let me know like the different ones that you've got.
Yeah, so I'm the author of four books, but the three most recent books are the ones that are most important on my agenda right now. I did have cancer in 2019 and 2020. I went through a year and a half of cancer nightmare, and I learned a lot. And I wrote the memoir, My Noisy Cancer Comeback, which is filled with stories on mental resilience and some hilarious experiences, because when I was sick and bald and very sick, I never stopped working. I got on over 30 planes out of my hometown to go do keynotes or race announcing, And the things that unfolded were pretty amazing. So a few tears, more laughs, that's My Noisy Cancer Comeback. But most importantly, I hit rock bottom halfway through my treatment. I was skeletally thin and weak. And it was about that time where my mom looked at me and she said, "You need to eat. You look like you were in Auschwitz." And I said, "Yep, I get it, Mom. I'm trying. This is not voluntary, right? This experience." But it was about that time where I realized that I was definitely going to rebuild my body, get back to healthy and strong and vibrant with stamina and so forth. But at that time, when I was feeling very confident about my road to recovery, I was suffering. Gosh, I was so pained for my peers. You know, what about the millions of cancer patients around the world or survivors that have been brutalized by their disease or their treatment? And they are not a fitness expert and they have no idea how to get their body to look, feel, perform normally again. And so that's where these books came in. This one is called Your Healthy Cancer Comeback, Sick to Strong. It's a thorough, in-depth guidebook for cancer patients and recent survivors to rebuild their body. I mean, there's hundreds of photos in there. These are stretches and strength training exercises you can do in bed. You know, most people think, oh, you've got cancer, you're sick, you're in bed. Okay, well, I had plenty of in-bed sick days, but if all I would have done was lie down for all that time, I would have lost even more strength and more mobility and lost more stamina. And so you got to do what you can when you can. You don't have to go run a marathon, but if you're sitting in a chair, can you move your arms and maintain some strength and stamina? You can. So this book is a thorough guidebook, and I'm hoping it will end up in the hands of every cancer patient and survivor newly diagnosed, moving forward in the world, because boy, is it necessary. Exercise and nutrition are proven to help people increase their chances of remission and decrease their chances of recurrence. There's also the Healthy Cancer Comeback Journal, which is an absolute blast. It's a fun place to lay your diagnosis details, but a cathartic way to express your feelings and your fears and your faith. And then some fun stuff, Roy, like, what have you nicknamed your tumor? What celebrities do you look like bald? I looked like crazy Britney Spears. I got a whole bunch of feedback in that category, but mostly it was crazy Britney Spears. So yeah, Your Healthy Cancer Comeback, Sick to Strong. All three books are available on Amazon and wherever books are sold. So I'm hoping folks will pick them up. And interestingly enough, you're in Poland, correct?
Yeah.
The number two, right outside America, the number two place these books are being sold like hotcakes is Poland, followed by Brazil. We've got Ireland and Germany. Why did I say Brazil? It's Poland, Germany, Ireland, France, and then they speckled. But Poland's number two outside of the States, which is pretty cool.
Brilliant. So I was like, while I was doing the research, I saw that during your journey, you came out early saying what you were doing on social media, and you kind of went through that you were sharing your whole journey, even with the hair loss and everything. How important was that, and how did that kind of help you in the whole thing?
So very interesting. I would have actually preferred to not tell anybody. I think it's weird when people share all of their private nonsense on social media. Like, we don't need to know that your stomach is acting up right now. So I would have loved to keep my diagnosis private, but I was going to lose my hair. You know, I was going to show up bald. I wasn't going to be a wig person. So I thought, well, if I show up bald, people are going to ask questions. So I have to tell them. And I did so up front in a little video. And I said, bad news, good news. Bad news, I found a lump. I've had the exams, the biopsy. It is cancer. Good news, doctor thinks I'm curable. So plan to see me as expected. I am maintaining my schedule. I will show up at a town near you to be noisy. I will not accept pity. You can root for me, but I'm coming and I'm going to be fine. So that was a weird video to have to shoot. I mean, I've talked about a lot of things, but talking about my own disease was difficult, but I did it. And then I would keep people updated in minor ways without really telling the truth. So we talk about branding. My brand is about health and happiness. Me getting online, talking about suffering while it was happening, wasn't going to benefit my audience. And so, you know, fitness is about you. It's not about me. It's got my name in it. So you know that it's a trustworthy brand. I'm the character behind it. But this brand is about you. And so I believe that if I got online and I said, hey guys, I have been sleeping on the bathroom floor every night because I am so sick. I don't think that would have benefited my audience. So I kept things light. I never really got into the gory details while they were happening. I also felt that if people were pitying me, I would have felt really bad. Some people like drama, and there's when someone feels sorry for you. I do not like that. And I knew it wouldn't have been good for my mental health to request pity or whatever that action would have resulted in. So I kept most of the gory details undercover until I was done. If you look back at some of my videos during cancer, I look like I was having a great time. Nobody knew all the bad stuff. But, you know, as things got hard, they also got really weird. And I showed up at a race, Big Sur Marathon in California, one of the most iconic marathons in the entire world. I'm there. It's Saturday morning. We have a short 5K the day before the marathon. And I get up and I wash my bald head and take a shower, and I come out getting ready to get going. And I look in the mirror, and my historically pale gray eyes my whole life have been pale gray blue, very light. And people have always said, wow, are your eyes gray? And I look in the mirror and my eyes are navy blue saucers. They're just these weird, almost black dots in my face. And I thought, what the heck? What is going on? And I'm across the country. I've got no family. My doctors are far away. It's early, too early in the morning to reach out to Florida and say, doc, why have my eyes changed colors? And I thought, well, maybe I could call an ambulance. And then I thought, well, if I call 911 and I say, come help, my eyes have changed colors, they will send a man with a straitjacket. They will send a psychiatrist and I will go to the loony bin. So I thought, well, 911 isn't going to be good. And then I thought, well, I could see. And I've got 5,000 people waiting for me. So I'm just going to get the show on the road and go do my job. And maybe I'm just seeing things, right? Maybe it is my vision. Maybe my eyes haven't changed color. So a few minutes later, my announcing partner, Rudy, he comes and knocks on the door to get me. And I open, I say, good morning. And he goes, what the heck happened to your eyes? And I said, I know, isn't that weird? So I had all of these bizarre, funny things. I mean, in hindsight, everything's funny. And cancer can be hilarious if you're willing to look at that bright side. And so that's where the memoir came. Is first of all, I just thought, you know what? People would get a kick. Like once I'm done with this and people can't pity me anymore, they would love to hear the hilarious things that happen along the way. And then also, I made some really good decisions during treatment that benefited me. And I thought, well, my role in life is to help people do better, be better. So that's where the memoir came in, and so many funny stories, just so many wild and crazy things. The chapter titles are even nuts. Nobody expects cancer to be funny, but it was. It was very funny. Awful, but hilarious.
Well, I think humor, you need humor, because, you know, laughing helps the spirits and just raises you. And there's no point in feeling sorry for yourself.
No, it doesn't do any good, nor does worry, right? You just got to get on with it and do the best you can. I certainly cried every day, but I would cry alone in my car. I would cry alone in the bathroom. I would boo-hoo for 10 minutes and I'd get it out. And then I'd go get on with it. And I really benefited from that. And I think most people would have said, oh, you have cancer, stay home. Don't get on planes. I mean, it's before COVID, but even then people were telling me to wear masks. I was like, that's stupid. I'm not wearing a mask on a plane. No, thank you. I'm going to be just fine. And man, my life was so much better for it. The fact that people take a sick person and isolate them now. I mean, if you're contagious, fine. But if you've got cancer, cancer's not contagious. And if you only have a few months left to live, go live your flipping life. Get out of your house. Have a good time, because life is short. And that's part of the message, is life is short. Health is important. And if you focus on those two things right now, you start living better than ever.
And of the things that you were doing, obviously the fitness was always important for you. Yeah. But was there any kind of, because I know a lot of people around the world, you know, it's increasing constantly with the cancer, so they experience different forms of it. Like, what kind of things that you realize, oh, this is really helping me?
So endless studies. When I got through, I think it was my sixth round of really mean chemo. So my chemo, I had 21 rounds over 15 months. the first six were nightmarish. The last 15 were hard, but less difficult than the first six. So I walk into my oncologist's office for round number six. Now I'm looking the worst I did. I'm looking and feeling the worst. Chemo is cumulative. So the more you get, the worse you feel. And I walk in there, I'm nervous. And when you get round one of chemo, you have nerves, you fear the unknown, right? You're afraid of what's going to happen. Some people don't have horrible experiences with chemo, and I want people to know that. Not all chemo is terrible. For me, I had a terrible time with it. So I go in for round number six, just thinking, oh gosh, I know what's coming. And I sit down in my doctor's office, and I'm a little bit of a basket case. I look terrible. I got no fingernails, no eyelashes, no nothing. And he says, Fitz, you've been doing so great. I'm so proud of you. And I said, what? I'm not doing great. I am a mess. Every single iota of my body has been destroyed in some regard. Why are you saying that? And he says, no, you've done so good. I thought, I don't understand what you're saying. He said, Fitz, listen, I'm not saying you have not suffered. However, if you were not as healthy and fit coming into this, you would have been hospitalized, not for just one night. And I did have one night in the hospital. He said, you would have likely been hospitalized for an entire month. You likely would have had a feeding tube, which would have put you at risk for infections and all sorts of other nightmares. He said, so instead of being hospitalized for a month with a feeding tube, because you were so healthy and fit coming into this, you have been able to travel across America, having more adventure than most healthy people have in a decade. So I know you've suffered, but your health, your fitness, your commitment to exercise and nutrition has really paid off. And that was a real light bulb moment for me, because I thought, I'm doing bad. But then under his view, he's never seen a patient do something like that before. So, okay, my body has diminished, but it still has done the things I've asked it to. So, you know, that was a real strong atta girl for the exercise and nutrition. And then, you know, as I started doing more research into the new book, I mean, the studies are endless, proving that we really have so much controls over our outcomes. Now, I don't disregard the need for Western medicine, chemo, radiation, surgery. Without it, I would not be here, I am convinced. However, did I make myself more likely to survive by exercising and eating wisely? I did. Will the cancer be less likely to come back because I still prioritize my health? Absolutely. And that's a real priority for me. So if you've got lung cancer or brain cancer or colon cancer or whatever, know that there are things your doctors can and should do, and I hope they do, but there's also things that you can do. And would you rather have a 94% chance of survival than an 86% chance of survival? I think the answer is yes. And when you're in that dire position, you know, when someone looks you in the eye and says, I'm so sorry, you have cancer, everything else in the entire world becomes unimportant. All you wish for is your health. You forget about your fancy car and your boat and the movie or whatever it is you wanted. All you want is your health. So don't wait for illness or injury to strike. Let's do it today. Start focusing on your health. Now, you don't have to be perfect. You just have to be better. Now, I've created a ton of free resources on fitsness.com that make it easy to understand and doable. But you know, most people know the difference between healthy food and unhealthy food and how to move their body. So do it now. And then if any sort of illness or injury will strike, you'll be so much more likely to recover and rebound effectively than you would if you were a weakling or a sickly person going in. So health, 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 it matters so much. And you know, this experience, although it was a bad experience, has made me even more passionate about what I do and how I serve people, because I truly am a believer that if you focus on your health, it will relay into mental health benefits and professional success and better personal relationships. It just really, it is kind of the magic pill.
Brilliant. When you go through the chemotherapy, you mentioned 15 months, and I saw your video with the ringing the bell, and
yeah,
with detoxing then afterwards, because I know it's a lot of chemicals. I know, you know, they have benefits for actually, you know, removing the tumor, but also the damage other things. So like with the nutrition and everything, because you know, there's some people going through this at the moment, there's some that, you know, unfortunately will go through. What's the best way to detoxify so that you're kind of clearing this out of your system, getting yourself back to the prior to everything?
So I never looked at it as a specific detox. I just continued making baby steps towards getting back to me. So, you know, there was a point where I could not exercise much. I would do the exercises in bed and the stretches in the shower. So as far as movement goes, baby steps. Don't try to be who you were last year. Not going to happen right away. So move forward in a way where you don't ever have a setback. I never had a setback because I never pushed too hard. I would go little bits at a time. And then, you know, quite often our stomachs go for a wild ride with these drugs. And, you know, depending on where your cancer is, maybe if you have colon cancer, you're definitely having some digestive issues. So it's reintroducing those healthy foods as you can. And again, trying to leave the unhealthy foods behind. So there really is no quick fix for any of it. I think water, you know, our bodies are over 60% water. Our whole body, we're basically just a big old water bottle walking around, right? This is who we are. We're a bag of water. So water, 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 you know, drink as much as you can. And eventually things will start evening out. You know, what I experienced was a loss of nasty side effects, which is what I wanted. You know, my stomach started settling down. My fingernails started growing back. I got little eyelashes showing up. You know, those things were not only exciting because I missed fingernails, but they were a sign of health, a sign of health, a sign of things improving. So just know that it takes time, but if you keep moving in the right direction with your choices, you will probably recover quicker than if you hadn't. And I don't know, it's just exciting. You can get back to mostly normal. Now I am dinged up. I have some solid scars. I still go to physical therapy for this left breast area. But I'm mostly great. I got a little short-term memory thing that drives me crazy because sometimes someone will tell me their name and it just whoop, disappears. And apparently a lot of people have that too. Mine is definitely related to chemo brain, but I wasn't perfect before. I'm not perfect now. I'm pretty great. And I know so many people in similar situations that went through the ringer with cancer and now they're doing fantastic, living their best life. So there's hope.
I love what you're doing. I love the different books and just on the water as well, because a lot of people, they kind of tend to go and just get the bottled water and everything, because something I've tested and I make sure I get the filter and then the ozone generator. Quality water, it's actually critical, because sometimes people think, yeah, just use the tap water because they say it's safe. And it's like, just make sure that, because we're made up of so much water, it is so important.
Yeah, but lots of it. And I find a straw and ice keep me going.
So just finally, with all the different things you're doing, I always love to know social media, because I believe it's YouTube. You've got like 2.6 million views on your YouTube channel, which is very impressive. So what kind of social media do you find serves you best for what you're doing?
Oof. I would say right now, Instagram is very hot, I guess. That's where I would say the majority of my followers come in. New followers. I mean, YouTube is really where as you've seen, I've put out hundreds of videos and constantly create content. And some of it is repetitive, right? Fitness doesn't really change. It doesn't really change, you know, water's water. It's always been good for you. So sometimes I say things in different ways, but yeah, I try to create content that's useful, that is clarifying. You know, with fitness, people have so many misunderstandings. And the reason being is because there's all these people that are selling BS, right? They're selling snake oil and lies. And so I have to come in and say, no, don't listen to those dopey people. And this is why. But yeah, I think Instagram's great. I like making the short, fun reels. You can say a lot with a photo, with a little bit of text, but I would say I'm equally active on Instagram, Facebook, YouTube, LinkedIn. I like very much. I mean, my paying customers come from LinkedIn. So fitness.com is filled with free information for the consumer. You can buy the books and stuff there, but most of the content on Fitness is free. My real client base are corporates and corporations and organizations that hire speakers. So I stay active over there as well. Yeah, I mean, just it's a mixed bag for me, Roy.
So the best way to find you is fitsness.com. Is there any other handles that you'd like people to get you at?
Yeah, so fitsness.com is the home base for everything. And then Fitsness on Instagram, on Facebook, on YouTube. I keep it simple, stupid. If you look up Fitsness, hopefully you will find me. And if you find somebody else, go pinch them and tell them it's not yours. It's not yours. And this is what I want to ask is that if folks follow, I promise quality content in return. But what I would much rather them do is reach out, use a comment section or message and say, hey, I heard you on Roy's podcast and I'd love to connect because I would much rather have friends than followers.
Brilliant. Listen, thoroughly enjoyed the conversation. Thank you very much, Fitz.
Thank you.
So you make sure when you get her book that you give her a 5-star rating because it really helps and it allows more people to find it because I love what she's doing. And I haven't heard of somebody writing about that before where even in you're in bed and you can do a little exercise because some people think I need to go to the gym and do some exercise. So all these little things, they just lift people's spirits and they help them get to the next day. And that's all it's about. And just keep the smile going the whole day. So thank you very much, Fitz. So that's all for the Speaking Podcast, but you find me again next week. Take care. Well, I hope you enjoyed this week's episode. Be sure to give us a thumbs up, 5-star rating, and share with your friends. And you'll find all my shows with the QR code or bio.link/podcaster, as well as my podcast coaching. And I'd like to thank my sponsor, danielpacker.com, helping people with anxiety, stress, and addictions. He's got a 90% success rate, and you only pay if you're successful. Also, if you'd like to go on a podcasting tour, I can help you do that. And if you're interested in sponsorship, you can contact me on my bio.link/podcaster. Until next week, take care.